Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is the Sound Health Option Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. Good to hear your voice, and I want to thank everybody that came in with us and listening to the show on both Blog Talk Radio over there with Richard, audio only, and those of who have come into the Sound Health Options Radio portal and are listening. And I especially want to thank the people who are sending our messages on to people, to their own groups, to their own Facebooks. That is allowing our audience to grow, and I think that's really important because we have incredible information that we bring you, stuff that you probably won't hear on those regular shows. Today, we have a very special guest, and do you remember when we talked about vaccines and I said there'll come a time when we look back on these vaccinations with absolute revulsion, like the Aztecs who sacrificed children for a good crop? I think that's the same kind of thing that's going to be coming up in maybe 50 years. I hope less years than that. But our guest is going to talk about that and how medications are damaging our children. I'm hoping she'll tell us what we can do about it, join legislation. I really don't know, but she will be with us in just a few minutes after some announcements. Dr. Linda Lagman. I don't think she's written a book. I just think she's out there stomping the ground, and I mean that in stomping United States. Geographically, about what's happening to our children and how we are being forced to medicate them, even if we as parents don't think that's a good idea. Richard, we're being sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health here in Ohio. We've been collecting vocal prints for about 30 years, and we've come up with the corollary, well, the absolute proof, that people with similar issues, pathologies, traumas, diseases, have similar, if not identical, vocal anomalies, like sour notes in a song. And we recently did Hillary's health and Trump's health and compared them to some of the things people said they were experiencing, and we've put that up on our site, soundhealthoptions.com, under In the News. So go In the News and look at new articles. So we've put those up for you. We are being sponsored today by one of our softwares that we did for the Army, PTSD, and the other one is allergies. We make those softwares available to the public so that they can test their children, see what's going on in their own lives. And our portal is open for anybody who wants to jump in and do your sound work online. We will add PTSD. I think that they've already got it added from yesterday when we talked about it. But they'll have access to nutrition, muscles, and PTSD software so that they can take a vocal print, and instructions are all there, tutorials are there, and see what may be happening with themselves and their kids. And actually, there's enough software there for you to open a bioacoustic center in your community, and that's what we're hoping for, and that's why we bring you this show and all these really important guests. Richard, do you have announcements before we start?
I do. First, I want to remind everybody, depending upon where you're listening, how to get to everything. You can always go to soundhealthoptions.com click on the radio tab, and for today's show, it's Blog Talk Radio. And down there on that page, you'll see a link either to get to WebEx, where when we're on air and Sherry's doing vocal prints or we're showing pages, she's showing that, and also there's an active chat over at WebEx, and also you can get to over here to where I am at Blog Talk Radio, where you can either listen in at 347-850-1407, or you can also sign up for free at Blog Talk Radio and join the chat there. And I advocate for joining Blog Talk Radio because then you get bulletins and notifications, and if there are other shows as well as this one you want to follow, you can get a notice saying, oh, this show is coming up, and here's who is appearing. So it's a great thing to, and plus it gives us points, not monetary, just like, okay, good, go. You know, we become a featured show, which is always exciting. So there's
okay,
that.
Somebody
ahead,
has
Sherry.
Just posted in the chat, please ask Dr. Lagman, and they didn't finish their sentence. So if you'll go back and look at the chat and put that in, we'll try to get that in with the doctor.
I see okay. that there. We'll be asking her. That's not a problem. Don't worry. We'll definitely be asking Dr. Lagerman many things. I do have one announcement, and if you'll put that up, Sherry, it's about this amazing thing that I bumped into. As I told Sherry, I wasn't going out of my way. I just read a lot of stuff, and this appeared. And it goes to, you know, sort of pattern of what we'll be talking about with Dr. Lagerman today. Oh, this just blows my mind. The title of the article is Warning, CDC Wants to Quarantine and Force Vaccinate Americans. So that's disgusting enough. But then when you go on and you look down in the body of the article, it talks about that the proposed rulemaking for the Homeland Security and CDC is the CDC can forcibly apprehend healthy people, people not showing symptoms, people who have not yet been medically examined, and detain them, meaning take them into custody. And they can do that all without process of appeal. You can get an appeal, but it takes, you know, by the time you're already beaten up and put in a cage and vaccinated at their desire, then you can have an appeal. And I just find that appalling. I'm using my happy voice because my other voice is going to be using bad words. So it just blows my mind that this is even being proposed. That's even being proposed. Really? That's it.
I'm speechless here. But my announcement goes right along with this. And remember, people, that we are giving away software, and we do have one called Shingles to show why people would get shingles. And my article is about Merck admits shingles vaccine can cause eye damage and shingles. And here at the clinic, we've had many people come in with shingles. We know the frequencies to stop the pain. They don't need to do this. It just is ridiculous. But as I look at this whole announcement about these painful rashes and blisters, we've had people come in here that their granddaughter just had a shot, I think, for chickenpox. And this woman had shingles on here the size of grapefruits, like half a grapefruit. And she was just absolutely miserable. And the hospital wouldn't do anything for her. So she came in here out of desperation. And we were able to help her stop the pain, which I think is absolutely incredible since this is happening, causing eye damage. I didn't look at this. But as I was looking further into the entire article, I found a whole set of articles. Harvard-trained immunologist demolishes California legislation that terminates vaccine exemptions. CDC proposes rule to apprehend, detain anyone, anywhere. That's what Richard was talking about. Four things you didn't know about vaccines, and an outrageous picture, which I don't want to believe, but it looks like a newborn baby with an elephant trunk nose, and United States Health Agency hoping to get government funding for human-animals hybrid study. Aggressive hospital policy, get vaccinated or lose your job. We're going to ask our guest about all of this because we are losing our rights. I want somebody to run for president who will commit to set America free of this kind of tyranny and forced vaccinations and Obamacare, and it's just outrageous. There are rights, jail, or go to get these shots. You can't be seen at a hospital without the shots. You go to jail, you get the shots. You get the shots or your kids can't go to school, or they want to put your kids on medication. I just find it absolutely, this is not America. We are not free with our own bodies. What next? Boy, and what a thought to introduce our guest on, Richard.
That was almost like that was rehearsed. That was great. Spooky. It's all spooky. I just have to put it in the category of spooky. That is a perfect cue for our guest. Linda Loggeman, PhD, was a clinical psychologist for 23 years and a multi-award-winning professor at UC San Francisco. She currently studies trends in psychiatry and psychology and the impact on public health. After observing the mental health field had become dominated by psychiatric labels and drugs that were doing more harm than help, she gave up practicing psychology and moved to Washington, D.C. to work on legislative reforms of the field. Dr. Loggeman is a frequent guest on radio programs across the country and was featured in the independent film The Big Lie, American Addict 2. She writes and speaks about the current state of the mental health field and potentially harmful emerging trends to watch out for. Linda is also an active commissioner for Citizens Commission on Health Rights. Good morning, Dr. Loggeman.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, so we've already set the tone.
You did. You really did. I couldn't believe it. It's like things you're saying. I mean, we are in really dangerous times with losing rights, losing freedoms. And, you know, on the outside, there's, you know, people go to the store and they go out to eat and entertainment, and things could look good, which is deceiving because we are in a tyranny right now. We're a very dangerous time. So, yeah, that's an amazing lead-in.
And good morning to you. Yes, and good morning. This is
yes,
Zara.
Right, good morning.
I want to start, though, back slightly, and then we'll jump back into that. Was there in your, when you were practicing for those 23 years, was there a particular patient or event in your practice that made you stop practicing and move to D.C. to become a rabble-rouser? And I mean that in the best of ways.
Yes, thank you. I take it that way. You know, it was accumulation of people. And my practice was in the financial district in San Francisco, you know, for most of the years. And so I saw a lot of regular people with, you know, very successful business people with the usual, you know, mental and emotional and spiritual struggles that people have. And it really, it was just one too many people, and it was a tipping point for me where it's another person that is perfectly fine but is already on psychiatric drugs, coming in already on psychiatric drugs, or telling me, oh, their child was just diagnosed with ADHD and they don't really want to, but the school said, you know, they need to put their kid on medication. These kind of things where it was a tipping point. And I was like, you know, really looking, what is going on? What is making all these normal people think they need to be drugged and to drug their children? And, you know, and some of it came directly out of commercials, you know, or all the media about, you know, ADHD and the adult ADD, where I had people who'd seen things on, you know, in media and said, you know, I think I have that. Like, and I had this woman, this was one of the last straws for me. I had this woman at the top of her game professionally. She was at the top of her game, super successful. And she came in, she's like thinking she needs medication for attention deficit. I'm like, well, what would you be wanting to medicate? What's going on? And it was like regular things. Like, well, you know, 'cause she multitasks, of course. She's, you know, she's trying to do, you know, emails while she's on the phone. And in the end, she talked herself out of it. You know, when I was asking, well, is this interfering? Is she having problems at work? Is she, you know, getting written up or something? And she's like, no, no, I'm like, you know, I'm doing great. It's like, well, what's going on? Why do you want to drug yourself then? So, but since then, actually since closing my practice and doing much more research, I have far more concern than I did even starting out, and see that, you know, I also liked, Sherry, when you were talking in the beginning about perspective, like with vaccines, thinking that, you know, we're going to at some point look back on that as, you know, like Aztec sacrifices or something. I really think that so much of what we're doing now, we will look back on, I mean, so much that's going on in the mental health field, look back on and wonder, how did we allow that to happen? How did we allow so many children to be drugged with mind-altering drugs when their brains are developing? You know, like, the numbers are staggering now, and we are drugging babies, literally infants, you know, birth to one-year-olds. They're in this country, in the U.S. right now, the fastest-growing market for all psychiatric drugs are infants. And we have just under 300,000 infants on psychiatric drugs now. It's unbelievable that there are any on there.
It's I at this moment I have no words I can use on air to express my feelings about that.
Yeah,
it blows my mind. I want to ask a question. I want to make a comment about this because I watched the film The Big Lie, American Addict 2, where you had quite a bit of information to put out, which was really, I recommend to everybody that if you're not in a bad enough mood, that's a great film to add to our pile of things to watch. It's a great film. And after I say that, how do you think in all of your research and now that you're working on legislation and really, you know, trying to make change, how the hell did we get here? How did we get to a place, how did the industry of pharmaceuticals get to a position of such power? Is it really all about the money? I have too many questions. What I'm asking is, how did we get to a place where 300,000 infants, 300,000 infants are medicated? How the hell did that happen?
Yeah, well, I do want to trace that and look back at this. You know, I mean, the short answer is that, you know, there's a diagnostic manual. Just like there's for adults, you know, the American Psychiatric Association puts out the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. There is also a manual. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but it's called Diagnostic Classification 0 to 3. And it is for birth to 3-year-olds. And it is the diagnostic classification of mental disorders for infancy in early childhood. And it looks all official, just like the other one, you know, like the adult version with numbers, you know, code 2 point, you know, this or whatever for mental illnesses. But they are all just, I would say, everyday things. But when you have a manual like this, like I'll give you an example, sleep onset disorder, number 510, sleep onset disorder. And that is defined as this is looking at a 12-month-old child or older. So they give you a break if you're like 6 months old. But 12 months old, at that point, if a child needs the parent to stay in the room until she falls asleep, or the child needs reunions with the parent, i.e. the parent leaves the room but comes back in response to bids from the child, if this happens 5 times a week, for at least 4 weeks, that is a mental illness.
Wow.
Now, this is like happens every day, every home, multiple times a night. This is normal behavior. But if you, with authority, and that's what's going on in the psychiatric field, with authority, people are told, this is a mental illness, your child, this is, and the other thing is parents get scared because they're told, these are the early signs of something. This is anxiety. If we don't treat this now, your child's going to have a mental illness. And so parents believe that. They're being betrayed. They go for it. The pediatricians are being betrayed. And they put their kids on psychiatric drugs. It's the only, I mean, this is how to understand how we're with these many kids drugged. You know, the infants, preschoolers. It's actually of 2-3 year old kids, preschoolers, 1 in 70 in the U.S. is now on a psychiatric medication. So I give you the numbers for all the different breakdowns of ages, but that's the most kind of the immediate history of how we got there. But I really do want to look at the big picture here. As, you know, controversial as it may be, factually, the history of psychiatry is a history of one destructive miracle cure after another. Like, you can go through from back to things that we now, with our perspective now, we look at and say they were barbaric. You know, there are all kinds of weird things where they, you know, hang people, look like witches, you know, where they would do treatment, you know, hang people from their arms. And then even more recently, you know, the recent history of, like, lobotomies. Lobotomies literally were marketed as miracle cures. They were a breakthrough. They were the new breakthrough. They were the miracle cure. So if you were in that time period, in the midst of it, you were hearing that language, and people bought that. They thought, oh, now there's a breakthrough. Now they really can treat the suffering of people and, you know, cutting the brain. Our perspective now, because of time, we can look back and say that was obviously barbaric destruction. But what I'm really, you know, all the education work I do, and, you know, if we could sum it up, what I'm hoping for is that we get ahead of the game this time, that we have perspective, and that we can use the looking back at the history to help us see what we're in the midst of now. You know, these are not miracle cures that we're in the midst of now, even though we're being told the same authoritative assertions. You know, there's been lots of, you know, quote, miracle cures, but there actually have been no cures in the mental health field, in psychiatry, in traditional psychiatry. And that's because it has never used the scientific method. It's just authoritative assertions, but no scientific method. And so nothing has ever been discovered of a real cause or any real cure, but lots of barbarism in the name of health. And it's gotten more dangerous now because we've moved into not just the drugs, which are really bad, and we've got a quarter of the population now on them, but all the electrical stuff, which we can, that's a new topic we can get into, but it's the new thing, is, you know, electroshock resurgence of that, and brain devices, you know, implantable brain devices that are electrical in nature. And that's, to me, the new barbarism, that instead of people hearing the things like cutting edge, now we've discovered it's actually about brain circuitry, not chemical imbalances. Now we know what we're doing. I just don't want people to fall for it and then have to wait, you know, 2 decades for all the damages to be revealed and, you know, for it to be obviously, you know, wrong. I gave you a big
and
answer.
How did yeah, we're all everybody take a breath. Let's all breathe for
yeah.
a moment. And how did, I mean, it really, you know, as the audience knows, I'm never silent. This blows my mind. After I watched the film and I read a bunch of your material, it really is just stunning and appalling. And I'm still trying to figure out what happened in the psychiatry world. I mean, I also watched the film, The Hidden Enemy, Inside Psychiatry's Covert Agenda, which gives a really great background because it talks about experimentation, really just alcohol at that, straight up experimentation in the military, and how they'd give troops something and see what happened because they had a large body of people they could experiment on at will, meaning at the will of the people giving them the injections or the pills or the, you know, psychotropics or whatever they, let's give them this and see what happens. I mean, really, that's what they were doing, at least from my view. Maybe they thought they had an agenda, but, I mean, the agenda seemed to be like, let's give them this and see what happens. And how did we get into, you know, like, it seems like they're experimenting on us, the people, but it always comes back to me, one of my bylines is follow the money. It seems like it must be about the money because they're not really helping people, really. I mean, is there a tiny percentage of people that are being actually helped?
Well, Okay, first part of it, to answer first part, I think it's totally about the money. It's actually money and control. Money is the easier thing to track, you know, and it is, you know, follow the money. There's phenomenal amounts of money in this. I mean, just looking at, if we just look at ADHD drugs, you know, the stimulants that are sold for, you know, what's labeled as ADHD, those went, in 1992, stimulant sales were $70 million annual industry. That's not big when you're looking at the U.S. But with, you know, the advent of all the TV commercials for drugs and then the big push about ADHD, everybody, like, awareness about ADHD, stimulant sales went from $70 million in 1992 to $9 billion by 2012. $9 billion.
Wow.
That's a lot of children in the U.S. on amphetamines. These are amphetamines, which is the other thing parents aren't told. They're just given a name, you know, Adderall or something. They don't know what that is. It's straight-up amphetamine. These are Schedule II controlled substances. You know, we worry about drug-free zones around schools, and in the school, we're pushing drugs and creating, you know, all the problems that go with that. You know, addiction, and, I mean, there are tons of adverse effects from these medications. From putting a kid on speed. So money is one. It's and seriously, right now, the latest figures from IMS Health, that's the biggest, you know, the data analytics of healthcare transactions. You know, whenever you see statistics, it's usually from IMS Health. Anyway, nationally, 24.7% of the population in the U.S. is on a psychiatric medication currently. That's one in four. That's a quarter of the population is on a psychiatric drug. And that's all money. This has been, like, those TV commercials, they created a boom. They created the blockbusters. Like, psychiatric medications never were blockbusters before. Do you know that right now the number one selling drug of all drugs, all classes of medications, the number one selling drug is Abilify? That is an antipsychotic. And it has been brilliant marketing because the original market for antipsychotics is very small. You know, it's just 1% to 2% of the population is schizophrenic, which is what it's made for, people hearing voices. But through brilliant marketing, you know, if your antidepressant isn't working for you, add Abilify. And it's being given now to people who are experiencing depression, for children with, you know, ADHD. So money. And in psychiatry, of any other, the psychiatric pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry in general, every failure leads to more profit. It boggles my mind. I know of no other field, no other profession where that's the case. But if one drug doesn't work, you get sold two. If that doesn't work, you get sold a third. If that doesn't, you know, if enough of these drugs ruin the person, then they get sold, oh, I'm sorry, your condition is treatment resistant. It doesn't respond to medication. Because now we understand it's about brain circuitry and wiring. You need electroconvulsive therapy or, you know, one of these new things, deep brain stimulation, these new brain, you know, electric devices, so which are even more expensive. But it all moves to just selling another thing more and more and more. And it is a phenomenally profitable industry with lots of damage in its wake. So,
and prices are even going up higher and higher every day.
Yeah. And now the second part of your question, you said, would you ask me also if anybody gets better from them? I don't, you know, I look at things on the aggregate, you know, on average, the impact on the public and the, you know, and the increase in disability rates and everything. The statistics are very clear that there's more damage being done, more health damage, all kinds of more disability. But I do not ever, like, argue with one individual, an individual's personal experience. And if somebody says, oh, my God, that drug saved my life, I do not ever argue with that for two reasons. I mean, one is because I don't know somebody's own experience. But the other reason is because I know that 70% or upwards of people taking a placebo will report the same thing with the same conviction. So no doubt some people feel benefit from these things because 70 up of people will say that a placebo, a sugar pill, cured their depression or helped them study. And, you know, it's one of the things I have looked at, too, is placebo research, which is incredibly inspiring, actually. There's a lot we can learn from that. So I know, it just... This is a big topic.
I was just thinking that it's a huge topic, and I was thinking I saw a lecture once with Dr. Andrew Weil, and he was talking about that very issue, that when he was doing research in his earlier years when he was doing research versus the stuff he's doing now, that was one of the things he found, that in every case study he read, the amount of placebo positive effect on every drug he researched was at like at the 30% to 50% level.
That was,
you know, now that's 20 years ago, so it's probably just more, but even bigger now. He was shocked. Here, give a sugar pill and you're going to have less deleterious effect and more positive effect than probably, but that's in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. So it's true. The placebo effect has actually gotten stronger in this country. I don't know about others, but in this country it has. And that part of that is because we've put so much belief and faith in pills, you know. So the placebo effect has increased a lot. From the beginnings it started out, it was in the 30-somethings percent usually. But this is one of these things where we have so much attention and marketing on all these things that are ruining our health, not enough attention on the positive options for our health and well-being. They just don't get enough attention and support. But placebo and the implications of that is one of those areas, because what's actually occurring there? Like, there was a study, there are a bunch of placebo studies I can tell you about, but I'll just pick one out. And it was college kids. They took a group of them, divided them in half. They told them, one half, they said, we're giving you this new study drug, like a new ADHD drug. It'll help you focus. Okay, so they give them that. They say, okay, all you guys go study, everybody, and then gave them a test, whatever it was, next day, next week, I don't know. So then they take the test. On objective measures, test scores, the kids who had taken the new study drug scored higher than the ones who did not have it. On subjective measures, those students reported, oh, my God, I was able to sit and study, focus for hours, you know, way better than I ever could before. This is fantastic. Then they revealed to them that the study drug was a placebo. It was just lime-flavored baking soda. And so what happened there? These guys, objective measures, like they scored better. They did better. I would say it's they made a decision, and this is what, if we harness this and if people were supported in that and knew that with their mind, with the decision, making a decision, because it's not, we know it's not the pill, it was just a placebo, but they said, okay, I'm taking this pill, I'm going to be able to study, I'm going to be focused, and they made that be the case. So we don't, you know, you don't have to have a pill, you don't have to be wearing, you know, your lucky hat or whatever it is. You can just make the decision and say, you know what, shift, change. I am going to feel better, and make that be the case.
And in a certain way, you'd be better off. In a certain way, you'd be better off wearing your lucky hat.
That's right. Yes.
We have a question from Philip from our audience. Please ask Dr. Legman about Dr. Peter Bregan's book, Toxic Psychiatry.
So Peter Bregan's done a lot of great work in this same area. So he's got that book. He's got, I don't know what the comment in any particulars, but just I would say, you know, he's a good resource. He's got a book out that is called Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal also. And it's, and the subtitle is something like A Guide for Patients, Professionals, Family Members, something like that. He's got a lot of good resources, and there are a few people out there. There need to be many more, but there are a few people who've been out there for quite a while trying to raise awareness and sounding the alarm bell of, like, look where we're going with this, and we need to, pull back and not just keep following along and taking this, you know, authoritative advice or pressure to do these things that I think intuitively, I do think intuitively people know that this can't be good. Like, I think parents know intuitively this can't be a good idea to give my child a psychiatric medication. And they override their own common sense because the authority force is so strong, and it's so supported in the media, and everybody's like, oh, more mental health, more access to mental health, more psychiatry, telepsychiatry. You know, we need to reach everybody, all these underserved people in rural communities. We need psychiatrists on the phone, being able to prescribe them. These are our measures. These are some of the things going on Capitol Hill that people are fighting for. You know, on Capitol Hill, there are 3 registered pharmaceutical lobbyists per congressman. They're just under 1,300. They're just under 1,300 registered pharmaceutical lobbyists. That's not counting the lobbyists from the American Psychiatric Association that are up there too.
Wow.
Yes, I know. That's what's influencing laws.
Oh, that actually, yeah. I may have to lay down after that one. Oh my God, that is.
Okay,
I'm
but there's
very,
hope.
I'm,
I don't want anybody to get.
Okay. Okay. No,
I mean, it is okay, good. Important All right. that we. No, seriously. I mean, it's very important that we know what we're up against and that we accurately
right.
look at it. Because if we can't accurately, like, look at it and face it, we aren't going to correctly estimate what we have to do to handle it. But the good news is truth is stronger than that. And I'm not kidding you. I go up there and I have a meeting with some senator or something and give them actual facts. And even though they've been flooded by pharmaceutical lobbyists and the American Psychiatric Association, there are a lot of good people up there, and they recognize the truth, and then it shifts things because it is common sense. And when people have the actual data, it's like, you know what? Somewhere in the back of my head, I knew this. And so then you can make difference.
That's an amazing thing. Go ahead, Sherry.
We are looking at a fact sheet on your site. So I just wanted to point that out to people, and I will put the link in the chat for everyone. Is there additional facts that we could point them to?
Well, the CCHRINT.org, CCHR, you know, for Citizens Commission on Human Rights, CCHR and INT is the international. So CCHRINT.org has just a treasure trove of information and alternatives that people can use and all kinds of it's a database that it's compiled all of the information from drug regulatory agencies so that you can look up and find the side effects of drugs. It puts them all in one place so that people don't have to go to the FDA, go to this regulatory agency. It's all in one place. Anyway, it's just a great resource. Lots of articles about all the different key topics that relate to the mental health field and what's happening.
That's also where the movie that I mentioned, The Hidden Enemy Inside Psychiatry's Covert Agenda, is available to watch. You can watch it right there on the site, and I'll put that link in both the show notes. Because it's really historical background on, you know, where they started basically throwing things at troops to see what would happen. As I say, that's my opinion. But, I mean, it sure looks like that. Like, oh, let's try this. Let's give them LSD and see how they are as warriors. Really? LSD? What are you thinking? You know, any of the number of things they did. So I have a thought that just occurred, you know, that popped up when you were talking about some of these things, that really this is, in a certain way, the way they're marketing now and the way they're taking advantage of, as you say, then the cycle is, oh, that didn't work here, now take this to counteract for that, is this is almost like the same kind of marketing with New Improved Tide. You know, we had Tide, and then we had New Improved Tide. You know, it's just, it's shocking.
Yeah.
That's really, if you go back from the what they're trying to do and what they say they're doing, that's really it. It's really like, oh no, here's this better product now that wasn't strong enough or didn't you know make you whatever enough. So, but I want to redirect us to really talk about, because I know that this is one of the things you're really working on now, is this amazing resurgence of ECT, or electroconvulsive therapy.
Mm-hmm.
How did this, what?
Yeah,
how did
I know.
This happen?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I know. You know, most people don't even know that electroshock is still going on, ECT. They thought it was done away with, you know, the same time lobotomies were, but it's actually always been done, but it is being really pushed now. There's a whole push. It's amazing marketing going on. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, this is like, there's more involved with this that I don't know if I'm not sure if we'll have time to get in, but in a nutshell, a lot of people have become aware of the damages done by the pills. And a lot of people are on them and it hasn't helped them, you know, but they're stuck on them now because it's really hard to get off of these drugs once you put on them. You know, that's, again, money, lifelong customers, because they do alter your brain chemistry, but in a way that, you know, causes kind of like addiction, because your own chemicals start, you stop producing as much as you were before because there's an artificial elevation. Just like when somebody takes cocaine, they need more the next time, more and more. Same thing happens with some of these drugs. Your body tries to acclimate and adjust, and so it decreases production, and then you're really in a mess. But anyway, so because of awareness about all the damages of drugs, they're already, the field is poised for the next big miracle cure. We're right on the cusp of that. And that's why it's such an important time for preventing the catastrophe that would follow if we don't do anything. So the move now is over to electrical. It's like, oh, yeah, we thought the chemical imbalance thing, but that didn't really work. So but now we have the breakthrough. Now we know it's because it's electrical. So trust us, we have the answer. And so that's where there's the resurgence of ECT, because the rationale for ECT, it is for, quote, treatment-resistant depression. And treatment-resistant is defined as you didn't get better from the medication, which is, again, like, just they just call it that as if that's an official diagnosis. Instead of saying, oh, my God, these drugs don't work and look what we've done, they say, no, that your condition is treatment resistant. It doesn't respond to medication. So now you need the electrical interventions. So one main one is, you know, electroconvulsive therapy, which, just for people to know, is up to 450 volts of electricity shot through the brain, intentionally inducing a massive seizure. Now, just as a little side note here, neurologists, actual brain doctors, you know, real brain doctors, try to prevent seizures. You know, a brain disorder is epilepsy, and then neurologists try to prevent seizures because it is known that severe seizures can cause brain damage. There's some rupturing that can go on, hemorrhaging in the brain, like little micro hemorrhaging, and there are different things with massive seizures that can cause brain damage. So on the one hand, you've got neurologists that are actual brain doctors trying to prevent seizures. On the other hand, you've got psychiatry, because of some bizarre idea and experiment. They don't know why, but they think it works. And so they induce a seizure, which is far worse than one that would occur naturally from, like, say, if somebody had epilepsy, because it's being induced with a massive blast of electricity into the brain, which... Actually, a biomedical engineer explained to me what happens with ECT. He said it causes tears, like little holes in the delicate cell membranes in the brain, and then those cells die. So ECT, but they're trying to repackage it, just like the new and improved. They literally are repackaging it and saying, oh, it's nothing like before. And when people make these comparisons, I've had people like try to say stuff to me. It's like, oh, that's... You're so wrong in making that comparison. It's nothing like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. What they do now is, it from the outside, it looks more civilized, I guess. because instead of the person having a physical big convulsion where they, you know, people used to break backs and bones and teeth and all kinds of things from the violence of the seizure, they anesthetize the person and they give them a muscle relaxant, a temporary paralytic agent. So they do not physically thrash. The violence to the brain is still going on. And just because there's been some cosmetic external thing that makes it look okay does not mean it's okay, you know. Anyway, but they're repackaging it and saying, look, it's so, you know, and they'll even, you know, you can even see stuff on YouTube of ECT, you know, being done because it doesn't look so bad. What they will not show you, and you will never see footage of, is the recovery room. Because in the recovery room, after this trauma to the brain, which is total trauma and brain injury, in the recovery room, what you will see is people drooling and wetting themselves because of the damage that's been done.
People are reporting that they are crying over what you are saying. Can we stop this?
Yes. Okay, yes. Let's move to the what we can do, because I do not want to leave people in tears or feeling hopeless, because I'm telling you, like, we absolutely can, we can totally turn this around. And I am actively working on Capitol Hill, and then also I do travel, like I'm in Washington State right now because I'm working on some state legislation here to get a ban on the use of electroshock on children. So it's a start, you know, I was working on the kids. But let me tell people some of what's going on so that they don't feel hopeless, because, you know, for too long, I think we, people with, you know, with this kind of viewpoint, have not been in the game. We've bought the line that, oh, it's the system's rigged, everybody's bought on Capitol Hill, or the politicians are all bought, we can't do anything. That is totally a lie and has kept us out of the game. But I can tell you, you know, like the other interests and groups are using the system and laws, and that's, you know, it's important that we get in the game. And right now, Congress has initiated an investigation into the FDA for their handling of the shock machine, the ECT machine. Unbelievably, the ECT machine has never gone through clinical trials. It was never tested for safety or effectiveness, never. But the FDA has allowed the industry to keep using it and just keep asserting that, of course, it's safe. We've been using it for all these years now. Of course it's safe and effective, you know. But there's never been any scientific proof of that. There's never been clinical trials. So Congress just started an investigation of the FDA. They, you know, sent them a letter. They put them on notice. They told them to, you know, answer a bunch of questions. And so that's a process that has begun. And that's, you know, that's through a lot of meetings and education and raising awareness that this is, can totally happen. People do need to spread word. It's about awareness, and this is what you do, you know, on the show. And I'm sure what your listeners do is they pass things along at Facebook and, you know, spread the word, because we will reach a tipping point. If more people were aware, they wouldn't, in the privacy of one doctor's office, you know, fall for this. They would have a big picture view and be like, yeah, no, I don't think so. No, thank you, your new miracle cure, you know. I'm also working on laws. And, you know, we got a law passed in New Mexico, the state of New Mexico. It's the strongest bill in the country right now, protecting children from psychiatric medications unnecessarily, and parents' rights around making those decisions and not having the school pressure them. And letting them use alternatives and find out what's really going on with the kid that's got troubled behavior. So, you know, that's the state of New Mexico has that protection in place. So I'm very happy to work with anybody, you know, any listener who wants to get something in their state to protect kids and then parents' rights to make those decisions about what medication, you know, and if their kids are put on something. And then to ban the use of electroshock on children. And people can reach me. You know, there's the CCHRINT.org website for lots of information. my website, I'm so busy with so many things. It's not updated, but you can definitely go to that website. You can reach me. My email is there and my phone. And that's drlageman.com. It's drlageman.com. And if anybody wants to work on anything, I travel. I do help with state legislation to make it happen.
And how does the ECT still exist if it's never been tested or never been? How does that happen? That a thing that is so traumatic. I mean, that's why when I first introduced it, I didn't call it ECT. I called it slowly electroconvulsive therapy. Creating convulsions and killing brain cells. How can this be good? Right. Let alone, how does that just keep happening? And the fact that the shocking thing when I first started reading your materials was that it's having a resurgence. It's like, oh, look, this is back, better than that. It's the new improved. Really?
Right.
How does that happen? I mean, who's behind that?
Yeah. Well, there is corruption in the higher levels of the FDA, and there's, I mean, that's how it happens. And not enough people aren't aware, so it's going on under the radar, and there is big money involved. Each shock is $2,000 to $2,500. It's being done the most, the person who gets the most shock therapy, like the age group, and is 70-year-old white females. It's a Medicare thing. There's a huge increase in the amount of shock given from somebody age 64 to age 65. It's actually 360% increase in shock from age 64 to age 65, and that's because Medicare pays. So tons of the FDA, so how's it going on? Under the radar, people don't know. Corruption in the FDA with industry. Leaders within the that field and the quote experts that have financial interests, they profit from it. One of these people who promotes this and these newer brain devices is psychiatrist Sarah Lisenby. She's one of the biggest promoters of electroshock and these implantable brain devices, deep brain stimulation. She's got a patent on one of these devices. So she's making tons of money while she's advising the FDA about how safe and effective these things are. So it's just, corruption and being done without people knowing, and why we need a public outcry. You know, it's amazing to me, actually, that Congress started to investigate this without there being the air cover of a public outcry. And I really want a public outcry so these guys don't get smeared, you know, because they've stuck their neck out just on ethics to try to pursue this issue, but there's billions of dollars involved here, and these guys play nasty, and you know that there will be smear campaigns unless there's, you know, a big public outcry and stuff in the newspaper about shock therapy and everything, and then it would be okay. But right now, just, they really put their neck out there investigating this.
If there's anybody that you would like to have on our show to get this message out, you just let us know and we will make room. We have an audience question. Are vaccines involved here?
Vaccines are not. And I mean, I have my own views on that and everything, but it's not part of what Citizens Commission on Human Rights, and I'm working right now as an advisor, a commissioner for CCHR, and that is strictly, it's a mental health watchdog. It just looks at the mental health field and human rights abuses in the mental health field. So, vaccines has been on another track. It's not in this. Does that answer the question?
It does. I'd like to know your personal views on it.
Are you
allowed to say that?
My personal views, I think a parent should be able to make those decisions. Well, that's the one I can say. Yeah. I mean, It's not an issue that I could talk to you off the air about it. But
I am here
as a commissioner, yeah, for CCHR. So.
Okay, I'm asking.
But we've got
because,
lots of things going on. Oh, go ahead.
I'm asking because I have two damaged grandchildren that we reversed, and we've done a project with over 300 children that we've been able to look at what the damage was and reverse it using frequency. So if anybody wants to get
that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm working right now. One of the people I'm working with is he's a retired congressman, but he's passionate about some of these issues. His grandson developed autism after vaccines, and he focuses on that and is doing doing some work on it. So
that would be incredible.
Anyway,
another audience question: how to get rid of lobbyists? Do you do that?
I don't know that you can get. I don't know how you can get rid of lobbyists. I mean, on the one hand, there is a need. What it is we just need to have more regular people up there who don't have financial interests, and more experts without financial interests, you know, giving information. Because on the Congress, their staff do rely on experts for content info. Like, you know, they got to talk to people in the various fields. They have to make laws about so many things, and so they are relying on experts. The problem is that you have certain fields where there's like just tons of corruption, and it's not a simple thing of, you know, talking to the teachers' association and finding out what's going on in the classroom and, you know, getting actual information from people on the ground. You've got lobbyists where it's all their interest is just for making money. And so I think, I don't know that we can get rid of lobbyists. Maybe there's some way to limit them so you can't have three pharmaceutical lobbyists per congressman. But another answer is more people being active and having their voice be heard.
So many people want to know how to get a copy of this show because they think it's absolutely incredible. So I don't know if we can send you a copy of this you can put on your site, or we'll certainly
put
it on our site. There are several places. People are appalled. One lady said, there's not a word bad enough to describe what's happening to our most important resource, our children.
That's right. Yes. And
well,
the thing
you said,
go
ahead.
Oh, children, because there's... The American Psychiatric Association, the president of the American Psychiatric Association, sent a letter to the FDA commissioner asking for them to approve ECT for children. They're already using it on children with autism, off-label, you know, not approved. And so, absolutely, there's appalling things going on with our children. There is really an attempt to take out the generation. It's just destruction. And this is why we need these state laws and things to put in place. We're hitting this from many angles, but state laws that prohibit using electroshock on children, ECT, and then I'm still working on the federal level on this issue.
So currently, like I know that you were just, as you said, you were just in Washington State, so currently, is that kind of the best approach? Is start out with your individual state and try and make noise and get people to pay attention, and then at some point, you make enough noise, we make enough noise or attention, and then bring you in, or an ally that comes in and goes, okay, let's get you educated about this so you know, because you seem to be saying that once you actually get to like somebody who wants to pay attention, they are able to listen to you and go, oh, wow, I didn't know, or, you know, I don't know what they're saying.
Exactly.
They're actually paying attention. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, I've had people say, this changes everything. I had no idea. I've had people say that to me in Congress. Yeah.
Well, if you have, as
also,
you said, if you have three lobbyists in, you know, per congressman, which is, let's all pause and think about that for a moment. Really? That's, you know, stunning. If you constantly have people giving you this information saying, look, we're the good guys. We have the solution. Here, take this.
Yes.
And,
that's right.
You know, I mean, that's truly amazing. If we could imagine what we could do, the people, if we had three lobbyists for us per congressman.
That's right.
I mean,
exactly. Yes, exactly.
Oh my God!
And all the alternatives, that all the things that work, that are not toxic. If we had more people up there telling Congress about that, it would shift things. But yes, to answer your question, it's I do think starting at the state level is incredibly powerful, and it's actually not as hard as people might think to get a state law passed. You know, I'm happy to talk to anybody about that. But yeah, that's, and then you get, you know, if you get a number of state laws passed, then it's easy to go to the federal level and say, hey, look, states are passing these laws trying to get these protections in place. Why don't you just handle this federally, you know?
So. Wow.
Yes.
Incredible show. Them.
Really
thank you.
Stunning,
good.
Stunning and appalling material.
Yeah.
That, you know, we're here really, as I read, you know, at first when I was reading this, I thought, no, really, ECT? And then the more I read, the more angry I got and stunned that, as I said, it's the new improved ECT. Oh, look, it's new, it's improved, it's better. Now we put you into a paralytic state first, and then you just won't notice that your brain's being fried. Really?
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
I really appreciate you both, and I appreciate the audience being able to actually confront this information, take it in, because the reason some of this stuff can happen is because people don't want to look at it, and so it's like, I don't want to know about that. So then it just continues going on behind closed doors. But so I really do appreciate you and everybody who's actually taking this in and saying, oh, okay, this is actually happening. Because now it's like, now we can do something about it. And then everybody who's actually seeing this then has a responsibility to spread the word, and it's how we change it. We have to look at it first, and now we can change it.
Well, please stay in touch with us. Any new thing that you want to share, we will make room.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah, this is a fast-moving topic, so I may just do that.
Yep. That's great. And where are the best? I'm shocked to find. I didn't mean to use that, but I am.
I know.
I'm shocked. Period. Then I'm also surprised to find that we're, you know, our hour is already up. Where are the best places for people to, for those listening on Blog Talk Radio, to get more information about the CCR?
CCHR.
So bad at acronyms.
CCHR.
Thank you.
That's fine.
The CCHR. And is that start there and then go to your site after that?
Well, CCHR is going to have information about, you know, a lot of it about medication. They will have some information about ECT, about electroconvulsive therapy. I think, you know, I did two Huffington Post articles about what's going on with the shock therapy thing. There aren't a lot of sources now about the shock therapy. There's PR articles that have been coming out recently as they're trying to push it and say, oh, it's so great now. I'd go to CCHRINT.org and then you're going to put some things up on your site? You already did put some things up. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Okay.
Both of those.
If I come up with any other sources for things about the shock therapy stuff, I will I'll get in touch with you so you can add those.
Great.
Okay.
Wonderful. And for those listening, I would remind everybody that you'll be able to find this show at soundhealthoptions.com. Again, click on the radio tab, and then for today, click on Blog Talk Radio. And down there on the lower right-hand side, there will be an archive for Blog Talk Radio, and this show will be rendered and show up there in about 15 to 20 minutes. So it's there, and then also you can, if for those that use iTunes, you can go to iTunes and search for Sherry Edwards, and you'll be able to find the show there. And one of my favorite apps is called Stitcher, which is either you can do this on a computer, on a browser, or on either iPhones or Android phones. And you can get the app for free, and you can search for Sherry Edwards on Stitcher, and you'll find all the shows. And Stitcher has built in really excellent social media sharing, and you can actually directly email it to associates that you want to have this show. So it's one of my favorites for using that. So it's going to be available soon.
I will render the video that we just did. As you guys were talking, we showed these different sites, and I will hopefully have this up this afternoon on our site, the whole video.
That's fantastic.
And how to share it. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you getting the word out there, so thank you.
Okay. All right, everybody. Everybody take a deep breath again.
Yeah.
Wow.
We are going to
tell we don't. Can you tell we don't want to close? This is too important.
Yeah.
But we
really
have to.
Amazing.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you,
we
audience. Please share this with everybody on all of your lists. This is incredibly important information.
Really vital and changeable. That's the positive thing, is that, you know, as Linda said, she's making there's change potentially happening in Washington State, so that we can really go to our legislators and our congressmen and say, look, pay attention to this, and, you know, begin to make change. We can make change. We the people. It's a shocking idea. Again, I'm using that phrase somewhat intentionally. All right, everybody, have a great rest of the week. Thank you, Dr. Lagerman.
Thank you.
Later.